Dave Roberts can hardly watch. Here's the 1-2 pitch from Buehler. Got him swinging! That's it! It's a World Series win for LA! They've done it! They finished the job and give Los Angeles the parade it's been waiting for!
Steven Nelson, Dodgers Radio, over the Red Hot Chili Peppers, one of LA's most famous bands. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff, and it felt like a big exhale for the LA Dodgers, and rightfully so, Pearl, because when you have two teams who are playing in a World Series who are both kind of looked at as favorites, right? Both big payrolls, both are looked at as the big bad whatever of their divisions. When a team wins, it's more of an exhale, I think. And the Dodgers rightly deserve to have this exhale because I think there's a lot of people who don't put a lot of stock into 2020 because that season was abbreviated. Every year you have World Series expectations. You sign the biggest free agent to date in Shohei Ohtani, and they got it done. Kudos to the Dodgers. This is all about you today.
Yeah, I don't feel like that's a narrative with the Dodgers. And for some reason, I felt like something bizarre in the universe happened where they became these underdogs.
Really?
Is this
Perloff math, like girl math?
I just think that there's something about they were viewed as the resilient team, which is not usually a word you use with a favorite. You know, they overcame all. That's all they talked about after the game. Like, we overcame. Like, they were just hurt all year. And this was definitely like, this is definitely not the dominant team of this era. It's funny, they had something that those other great teams did not have. Some character, some grit that the other teams didn't have. So no, I don't view it as like, the Yankees felt like the big bad Yankees, and literally big. I mean, when you go Judge, Stanton, Soto, yeah, I felt like that's not like, they weren't the same. Do you think those two teams are mirror images of each other? They don't strike me like that at all.
Well, not mirror images in how they're constructed, but I mean, you're telling me Shohei Ohtani's not a big dude. Freeman is a World Series MVP and an MVP, and you know, Mookie Betts is an MVP. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who the Dodgers beat the Yankees out to sign him from Japan. Yeah, I thought this was, you know, they say, oh, two heavyweight fights. It was two Goliaths. And so anytime that happens, I think there's more of an exhale. And I'm not taking away anything from the Dodgers. I think their fans would feel the same way. It's the team, where's the championships we were promised? We were promised. We have all this talent. And they got it last night. And even with Shohei Ohtani being compromised with a shoulder injury. So it's fantastic for them. But the Yankees.
Yeah. Wait, I'm just curious. Do you guys view it that way, that this was two Goliaths going against each other, or was it sort of different? To me, they're very different style teams. Like, you saw, like, the Yankees just, like, came out there and said, we're just going to outslug you and win this game, where the Dodgers generated runs all kinds of ways.
I feel like this was definitely two Goliaths.
Yeah.
Especially since
Freeman hit home runs in five straight games.
Like, right.
And they then were definitely sluggers on both sides.
And I think maybe, and Pearl, I get what you're saying a little bit because of how this series was played, but I think if you ask the Padres fans and the Mets fans how they feel about this Dodger team, like, they got pummeled, their pitching. The Padres, the last two games, the Mets, every game the Mets lost, they gave up almost 9-10 runs. Like, they were hammering teams. I get what you're saying a little bit, but I just think that maybe some of that is just how this series was played, where it wasn't so many high-scoring games.
They gave Shohei Ohtani $700 million this offseason. You are no longer the little engine that could. And I'm sorry that Ohtani got hurt. But
Ohtani
still
got
out there.
Freeman got hurt. Obviously, they didn't really have Walker Buehler this year. Like, this just was not the dominant. Everyone's going the same way. Like Yamamoto, like, how many, like, what did he, all season long, like, he was not available the whole time. Like, they just said, like, this was an injured Dodgers team. And they had to really gut this one out, to me. Like, where the Yankees didn't do that at all. The Yankees were just like, well, we're going to have to wait and hit home runs.
Yeah, but the Dodgers, let's not totally whitewash what's going on here. This was not the upstart L.A. Dodgers. Not even close to that.
I'm not saying upstart. I just say, like, they were not the same as yet. You saw it on the field. Like, they were just not doing things the way they were not acting like a big, like, we're just going to outslug you and win this game. It's just not how they seem to approach this series.
Well, all right, we're going to have to disagree about that, 855-212-4227. But we're asking you today, what's this World Series going to be remembered more for? The Freddie Freeman heroics, and Freeman was fantastic and historic in this run. Or is it the Yankees implosion? It is not hyperbole to say that fifth inning yesterday was one of the most embarrassing innings for a team in a World Series. You know, Bill Buckner had to wear it in 1986. It's a very famous World Series between the Red Sox and the Mets. So much so, they made television shows about it. You know, Curb Your Enthusiasm spoofed it. It became part of our, like, zeitgeist a little bit and lexicon. This is so embarrassing. This is five Bill Buckners happened in that fifth inning. And it's everybody, Pearl.
It's not Bill Buckner, though. I mean, the Red Sox literally had the champagne chilling. Like, they were ready. Like, this is a way different scenario.
Tell me that it didn't have shades of...
Shades, maybe, but Bill Buckner, that was
okay,
history.
But this is what we're talking about. They're now in that history. Maybe it doesn't top Bill Buckner, but... It's now going to be mentioned in terms of World Series embarrassing moments. That fifth inning is now on the bizarro Mount Rushmore, the wrong type of Mount Rushmore of horrible collapses that can happen within an inning.
Yeah, but it's definitely like, honestly, somehow, I don't know that Buckner beats out Mookie. If he makes that play, then boom, we're going home. And like they had the whole celebration set up. Like, you understand the Yankees were still had to go back to LA and win two more games.
Okay.
Yeah.
I understand that. And I didn't say it was a perfect comparison.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's now up
you just
there.
Said, you actually just said it was five times Bill Buckner.
I said it was five times. I think it was five Bill Buckners. Yes, I do. Yeah, maybe maybe the actual like game scenarios weren't the same. But you're telling me that when Aaron Judge hits a two-run home run in the bottom of the first inning, and when the Yankees, and then Jazz Chisholm hits another home run, and the Yankees build a 5-0 lead after they'd been dead, and Judge especially had been dead at the plate, you didn't think the series was going back to L.A.? You didn't feel a momentum switch?
I totally did. And I agree, it's an all-time World Series error. But it's just not. Bill Buckner's, as you mentioned, is like, that's part of the zeitgeist. So you say Bill Buckner, immediately that play comes to mind. You say Aaron Judge, all sorts of other things come to mind.
I think you say Yankees fifth inning in the World Series is now going to mean something. It's the day after, so we haven't had 30 years to relive it. But it's the day after. That Yankees fifth inning is going to be talked about, not just in New York. That's going to be talked about for a long, long time. And it was so apropos. Because if you watch the Yankees, you know they are not a good fielding team. They are not a crisp team. They're not tight, like in a good way, you know? They're loose. They're too loose. They're talented, but they are not fundamentally sound. And the fact that this is the thing that would ultimately doom them, Perloff, is almost, it's poetic in a way.
Yeah. Is it the only thing that doomed them, though? Once again, like, they did go kind of cold in the series.
Oh, they were down 0-3.
Scored seven runs in the first three games.
But this is going to be the lasting. This is the last thing you saw, right?
Yeah, no, this definitely. This will be the story. But it could have easily been that Aaron Judge didn't hit if he didn't start to hit. It is kind of crazy. I would think the Yankees are going to look back and say, "Wow, we're paying these guys a lot of money. Like, do we want to invest in Soto if he's? But Soto was okay. He was good, but was he really worth? You know, $600 million in this World Series?
Well, they hadn't been to the World Series in 15 years, so he definitely helped that, but that's an interesting question.
I'm actually curious, like, would they have made it without Soto?
I don't think so.
That's the Guardians or the Royals?
No shot.
I think they just needed him. I mean, I think they just needed
him. Wait, what do you mean? Like, they wouldn't have made the playoffs, you're saying?
You could have argued they would have made the playoffs borderline the wild card team for me personally, but he had such a big impact on that offense. He is a key reason why Judge put up the numbers he did.
I agree.
Okay, so you're totally downgrading. Okay, that's a good point. You think, like, so if they don't get Soto, then they're not favorites anymore next year?
I think even if they do get Soto, they've reached max potential.
So I think the funny thing that you bring up, Perloff, we're talking about the World Series last night, obviously. Does this give the Yankees cover to not re-sign him? Because the Yankees, believe it or not, they do have all the money in the world, but Hal Steinbrenner has come out many times to say, I don't think you need to pay more than $200 million to win a World Series. You know, he doesn't feel like he needs to outspend everybody to win. Now, their payroll is high, but it's not the highest. And do you think this gives them some type of cover? Like, hey, you know, we couldn't win with Juan Soto, so if we get outbid, oh well.
Yeah, I do think it's the Billy Beane thing. I think the playoffs are a crapshoot, and I think the Yankees know that. Listen, I'm here in New York with Yankees and Mets fans everywhere. I was hearing much more optimism about the Yankees. I mean, the Mets coming to this playoffs. I think everyone thought, ooh, the Mets are hot. I wasn't hearing a lot of "this is our year" from Yankees fans. Maybe I was missing it, but I honestly felt like, and nobody thought the Dodgers were going to be here. Everyone thought the Dodgers pitching was going to implode. This was not supposed to be like, everyone's acting like it was a fait accompli. This could be the Yankees and Dodgers. I didn't hear that coming into the playoffs at all. That was not the temperature, in my opinion. Like that, did you guys say coming this playoffs, well, here we go, it's going to be Yankees Dodgers? I really thought your Mets were going to come through.
Well, but here's the thing. Yankees Dodgers is what we got.
Well, I'm saying, but like Ryan saying, like, this was the year, like this was the it year. They were all in. They mentioned that last night on the broadcast. Like, I don't know. It didn't feel like it was such a crazy all in year coming to the playoffs. It felt like they were a good team. So maybe they can. I'm saying they could recreate this next year. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
But the all inness happens in the off season, right? Isn't this what Jerry Jones kind of teaches us, right? The all in happens in the off season. It's the Yankees going after Soto. It's the Dodgers signing Shohei and Yamamoto. Like, that's where the all in happens.
I'm just saying, I don't think that it's unrealistic that the Yankees get back here next year. That doesn't seem like it's such a large stretch to me. If you have Aaron Judge, I mean, come on, you're going to be right there. You guys don't. I mean, how many times have the team made the playoffs? They missed it one time.
I know, but we just watched Aaron Judge not do much.
They better get Soto back. That's how I feel. It's like, if they don't have Soto and they don't replace him with someone comparable, I don't think this is a World Series team. They haven't been to the World Series this whole time.
I mean, is this team definitely better than the team, say, the ones that lost to the Astros?
Yes. Yeah, it's deep. Just, deep
even though
deep
they
didn't
win as many games.
Yeah,
but that has a little to do with the division too. That winning games has a lot to do with, you know, that has a lot of factors for that.
Cole
injuries,
was better. Yeah.
Aaron Judge missed a lot of time in a lot of those seasons. So did Stanton.
I don't know. I'm looking at this 2019 lineup. It looks pretty stacked to me, but I guess.
But you're talking about degrees here, aren't you?
I mean, like, this team looks like a better team than this year's team to me. But, you know, they've had a lot of star power. There's just been a lot of...
Wait, the 2019 team did not have a lineup that's Judge, Stanton, Soto.
Yeah, but they have, you know, they won 103 games, and it just seems like, I don't know, it just seems like an incomplete... The team that I watched in the World Series, like, once you got past Stanton, it was, you know, the Dodgers kind of were feeding after that.
No doubt. Yeah. But to say that there was not a lack of star power, that's, like, just not the truth.
Well, there have been some very, very good Yankees teams that have come up short in the postseason. You guys can't argue against that. It's not like this team is like all of a sudden this was the year. This was not, you know, they had 94 wins this year compared to 100, 103, 99, like 103. This team has been elite, and they're still going to be elite. They're not falling off a cliff.
No, they're not, but this is a big decision here with Soto, and it's going to push them to a place, which is weird to say about the Yankees, where they're probably going to be uncomfortable. Soto again, $500-600 million? What's the latest question? Or the latest ballpark, rather? 600? He's 20. Is he still 25, 26 years old? He won World Series MVP. He was like 19. Or he won the World Series, excuse me. He was like 19.
Just turned 26 last week.
Yes, they just gave 350 or whatever to Judge, who was 30, about to turn 30.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about this. And you know what, Pearl, the other thing, too, I think there's a little bit of, like, we knew the Astros were also another heavyweight in their league.
Astros were a problem for the
right,
Yankees.
Right, so, like, and even beyond just being a problem for the Yankees, they were a wagon. So it was like, maybe, yes, though, Yankees, I'm looking at the roster, they were really good. This is when Gary Sanchez was really good. This is when Glaber was coming up. We thought he was going to be a superstar. Those teams were really talented. But the path was not nearly as clear. We knew that they were going to have issues with the Astros to even get to the World Series. The path right now is totally clear, you would think. And yet, I don't know. It feels like it does feel like they lose Soto, all of a sudden they come back to the pack. That's, I think, the issue.
Well, I think, honestly, I always thought of it as like the Astros were one of those Mahomes, Chiefs, kryptonite situations for the Yankees. Like,
definitely.
They have Aaron Judge hitting 60 whatever homers. Like, they're going to be a contender. I don't think they'll probably be back in the playoffs next year.
Playoffs is not the standard for the Yankees. Just like, well, you would say, just making the playoffs is not the standard for
Mahomes. This is their first World Series since 2009. So, yeah, like, it's hard. I'm telling you, in today's baseball, like, it's really hard to do something in the offseason that's going to guarantee postseason success. The Dodgers, I mean, the Dodgers have been spending like crazy for 10 years, and finally they break through. And I think, honestly, and it wasn't, again, I keep saying this was not by any means. When you have an injured Freeman and an injured Ohtani, this is not the dominant Dodgers team.
Yeah, but Ohtani didn't get injured till the World Series. Well, look at the Hunter, let's not talk about that. And Freeman, it was later, too.
Look at how dangerous they were. They used to go up and down the lineup with 30 home run hitters, like, for a long time. Like, they've had some great, great, talented teams who just, for whatever reason, come up short in the playoffs. This team happened to be, A, have the right path, and B, really gritty.
But, Pearl, if at the same time, though, so, okay, let's take Ohtani out. He's hurt in the series. He doesn't give you much. And the Dodgers still were competent. They still scored runs when they needed to. They still played well. The Yankees have nothing from Aaron Judge, their best player. What are they? Nothing. They're not even an offense. Like, I think that is the difference, though, between those two teams, right? Is that, like, the Dodgers, they really survived Ohtani being hurt, playing with one arm. Yeah. The Yankees could not survive Judge being inept.
Yeah, that's probably true. And also, they did have Freeman against the Mets, and then they just went to town. I mean, maybe how many games did Freeman play? Three.
He played, but he was very ineffective.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't run.
855-212-4227. Okay, you can vote on our poll if you want, or give us a call. The question is, what will this World Series be remembered for most? Is it Freddie Freeman's heroics, or is it the Yankee implosion? Coming up next, we're going to talk a little college football with our pal Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 podcast. We got some headlines for you as well. Plenty of NFL news before tonight's Thursday night
Welcome
game
back, Maggie and Perloff.
The Houston
Happy
Texans.
Halloween, everybody.
Maggie Perloff.
If you're watching on YouTube, we apologize because we look idiotic, Maggie, in the best possible way.
I think you look great. I mean, it's a lot of leg. Not going to lie. But, you know, I don't hear a lot of complaints, Pearl, except for how white your legs happen to be. They haven't seen the sun in a while. But, no, I think this is the third year in a row that you're showing off the cans.
Years. That's not a seasonal thing. Trust me, my legs don't change. I'm getting a lot of people are wondering, which Eagles coach am I wearing an Eagles outfit? Am I Rich Cotite or Buddy Ryan? Yes.
You want to claim Cotite?
I just kind of look like Cotite.
Yeah, you do. And he actually lives around here. We could have probably had him come in with his old outfit. If we thought. YouTube.com/InfinitySportsNet, Twitch.tv/InfinitySportsNetwork, and on X at Maggie Gray, where you can see me as Guns N' Roses guitar man / Perloff as the 80s Philadelphia Eagles offensive line coach or head coach. Not sure.
I could be any position you want.
Whistle and all. Bogish is a hot take pinata. Give him a hit. You don't get candy. Hit. You get a hot take.
Oh, that's there the last one.
And EJ is Kendrick Lamar, and Ryan Botcher is Stitch from Lilo and Stitch. The last hot take. This goes out to one person and one person only.
It's a long distance dedication.
Yep, it is. We send this one out to former producer Pete Bilotti. This hot take's for you. The LeBron and J.J. Redick podcast was good.
That's a low blow.
Pete didn't hate Almond Joys more than he hated that podcast. Like, what's the most unpopular candy that people have?
That's got to be one of them.
I like coconut, but I'm weird.
Candy corn.
I don't like that.
Sucks.
It's gross. Low on the power rankings of candy. But yeah, that one's for Pete Bilotti.
I don't eat candy tonight. I eat Reese's peanut butter cups, which are protein bars. They're not candy.
Agreed.
Totally allowed. And my kids know that I will steal every Reese's out of their bag.
Couldn't you also apply issue. That to a Snickers, though? It's got peanuts in it.
Yes, you definitely can. Basically, if you stop at a gas station to get one of those power bars or something, that's basically a Snickers bar. They're not good for you in any way, except
woman,
the label says.
As a woman, I've been doing that for years.
It says
natural.
High protein. High protein.
The Yankees still have not won the World Series since 2009.
Loosely.
Some think that's too long. Many others think it's not long enough. It at least seemed like they wouldn't lose this fall classic last night.
The pitch to Judge, swung on and hit in the air to deep right. It is high. It is far. It is gone. It is a Judgian blast into the right center field seats. And the Yankees take an immediate 2-0 lead in this must game. All rise. Here comes the Judge.
That's John Sterling on Yankees radio. Jazz Chisholm went back-to-back with Judge in the first. It was eventually 5-0 bombers, but then their fifth inning implosion. Two errors and one misplay leading to five unearned Dodger runs. That first error was Judge dropping an easy liner to center.
You can't give a good team like that extra outs. So, you know, it starts with me there in the, you know, line drive coming in, misplay that. So, you know, that doesn't happen. I think we got a different story tonight.
His Yankees did retake a 6-5 lead, only to allow sac flies to Gavin Lux and Mookie Betts, top eight. And then game three starter Walker Buehler got the save. So the Yankees lose the series in five, 7-6 last night, and still no team to fall behind 3-0 in the World Series has even forced a game six. This is the Dodgers' seventh title since moving to L.A., their eighth overall, and their first full-season crown since 1988. Freddie Freeman, the easy pick for MVP, a two-run single in that five-run fifth, gave him 12 RBI, tying the World Series record. The Dodger parade is tomorrow in L.A. I'm told that Bronny Watch ended last night, so thank you for your service.
All right, here's Bronny with it. Dribbling left. Here you go, Michael.
Come on,
one
man.
One-on-one.
There
Bronny,
you go.
Two-pointer.
Yes! Yes! All right. There you go.
And the crowd goes crazy.
I'm telling you, man, this kid's got a good shot.
Rich Kotite saying that's the most important shot in the NBA this season. Michael Thompson, John Ireland called it on Lakers radio. Bronny's first career hoop came with 2:03 left in Cleveland. The Lakers eventually losing to the Cavs 134-110. The Pacers handed the Celtics their first loss 135-132 in OT in Indy. And the Pistons got their first win 105-95. Over the Sixers, Tobias Harris, 18 points and 14 boards in his much-anticipated return to Philadelphia. Can't wait for Saints-Panthers this weekend. Derek Carr's back for New Orleans after missing three with that oblique injury. And Bryce Young starts again for Carolina, even though Andy Dalton is back to practicing fully after spraining his right thumb. And we are now worried about unencrypted helmet communications in college football. Apparently, Texas Tech AD Kirby Hokut just realized that anyone with a receiver could hear their coach-to-player convos, so he brought it up at a Big 12 meeting. The conference then told its schools to send their equipment to the company for a software upgrade. That gear will be back in time for games this weekend. So if you've been hanging out in your, you know, your ham radio, your transistor radio, listening to Texas Tech quarterbacks and coordinators, your fun is now gone.
Wait, but is there no way that the opponent could have been intercepting these?
Oh, no, there is. There are easy ways this could have been intercepted, yes.
So, like, this could be a thing.
This could be a thing, yes. This could have been happening where all you had to do was, like, find the right RF frequency and you were hearing everything from the sideline to whoever's wearing the sticker on his helmet in the game.
Yeah, right. So, like, and what do we know about college football programs? Like, they will stop at nothing.
I just don't understand how it took until now for someone to go, hey, we're doing this on an open signal. Like, that should have been one of the things you did from day one. It's like, okay, how are we keeping this private? No one had that thought until recently, that it was just out there for anyone to hear, like a police scanner?
I've always assumed the Patriots had full access to all the helmets in Foxborough.
Right, but that we thought that took actual, like, dastardly event or like hackers or whatever. It wasn't just like finding channel 5.3 and sitting back and hearing Brady talk to whomever.
Of course that happened. Bogus, that's good.
I'm done.
Bravo, it's like, to you to
I
being
need regular clothes
the
ASAP.
Hot, the hot take pinata. You're not going to keep that on when you do your fan updates on?
I am just a hot pinata right now. I give you sweat if you hit me.
I can't wait to see how Perloff pulled off this mini fat suit. That's going to be a fun unpack after the show.
I'm not sure it's as exciting as you think it is. Right?
It's going to be documented on video, that's for sure. Bogus, thank you so much and for being a good sport. Okay, we turn our attention now to a person we're a big fan of, Chip Patterson. He's part the host of the Cover 3 podcast, CBS Sports HQ college football analyst. Chip, you just heard, I think you were on hold, for us talking about the helmet communications, apparently on unencrypted lines where anyone could have heard them. On a scale of 1 to 10, how predictable was this?
No, I would say that an 8 is probably how predictable it is. But I'll tell you, my favorite moment was probably earlier this season, a couple weeks ago, Georgia-Texas game. And remember, the rules are if one team's headset communications go down, then both teams have to agree to stop using the headset communications. And in Austin, it's weird. The visiting team, the Georgia Bulldogs, their headset communications went down. Mm. And so by rule, Texas decided to, Texas had to stop using their headset communications. And guys, it was the funniest thing. Once Texas had to stop using their headset communications, Georgia's were back. Oh, would you look at that? It's amazing that as soon as Texas isn't able to use it, well now Georgia's is back, so now both are there. So yeah, like, am I surprised that things are a little bit that we're getting a little bit into the like spy world, you know, especially 1 year after Connor Stallions and everything coming from Spygate? But you know, I do maintain that, you know, football at its core is the most beautiful dumb sport ever, because you're asking 11 people to do their job on time. I mean, any workplace, any team you've been on, getting 11 people to all do their job on time together is so difficult. So I understand that football is one of the margins, and I understand why people go to crazy lengths to steal signs and maybe even try to listen in on headset communications, but you still got to go out there and execute, and you still got to go out there and stop them. So I don't think that the overall integrity of the game would be threatened by someone having a really powerful CB radio out in the parking lot.
Chip, is that what happened with the officials? Were they having communication issues on that key pass interference play? Is that why they got that wrong?
Why the fans had to throw bottles onto the field and get the play reversed?
That's what, I'm sure y'all have, like, have y'all ever been at a game where there's just like too much like emotional weight, or just like the energy is just too thick? I think you had F1 in Austin. Yeah. It was Georgia's first trip to Austin. I just knew something chaotic was going to happen, because it was just too much going on with that game. Consider me unsurprised that we had bottles thrown onto the field, calls reversed, and all kinds of craziness, because it just seems like it was in the air that night.
Well, speaking of night games, so Lane Kiffin is complaining that Ole Miss did not get a night game for their big upcoming game. Is that a legit complaint from Kiffin?
Yes, it is a legit complaint, but I think that it's his job to complain on behalf of the fans. Mm-hmm. I think he's been around long enough to understand that when you're competing against Tiger Stadium, Death Valley at night, and the decisions are being made by the conferences and the television networks, Death Valley at night, everyone pretty universally agrees it's one of the most unique and intriguing and special environments. I mean, it's the kind of thing that people get fired up to watch. And like, with all respect to the Grove is outside the stadium. The Grove is not inside the stadium. The Ole Miss home field experience. Now, maybe if Lane Kiffin is able to take Ole Miss on a memorable run and string together, and I mean, this is a program that hasn't even played for an SEC championship since the game was created back in the early 90s. So I think that it is his job to stand up for his fans who would like to be able to have one of those great primetime big stage games. But I think he's also been around long enough to understand why he ended up getting the short end of the stick when the other option is Alabama at LSU Tiger Stadium at night.
Wait, yes. By the way, is Lane Kiffin, we're talking about, they host Georgia in 2 weeks, and they play Arkansas this week. Does Ole Miss have a chance to win these two games right now? Are they even going to be number top 25 team by the time they get to Georgia?
I think that Ole Miss, this is one thing that I've actually been thinking about a lot this week. There are a lot of teams right now that are so far from their peak, or they are so far from the best that they can be. Some of it's out of their hands because of injuries. Some of it is very much like their own doing because of performance. And I think that for Ole Miss, it might be a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. Their offensive line has been banged up. They haven't been able to run the ball effectively. Their star wide receiver, Trey Harris, is out. Like, the Ole Miss team that will take the field against Arkansas is so far from the team that was putting like 40 burgers and 50 burgers on everybody in non-conference play. And so it's just like, I think Ole Miss at its peak has the better team than Arkansas. And I think, you know, Ole Miss obviously as a favorite in that game is the way that the model sees it and the simulation sees it. But college football ain't played by a model, and it ain't played in a simulation. You know, and so if Arkansas is able to bring some of that tenacity that they've been able to bring against some of the better teams on their schedule, then yeah, absolutely, Ole Miss could be in trouble. But I generally think that Ole Miss should win this weekend in Fayetteville. But against Georgia, no, I think Bulldogs all day, just because, again, to your point, Ole Miss just doesn't look anything like the team that was just roaring out the gates at the start of the season.
Chip Patterson is joining us, host of the Cover 3 podcast. He's a CBS Sports HQ college football analyst. Let's talk the Big Ten for a little bit, Chip. Oregon, they're the number one team in the country, but are they the best team in the country?
Fairly, but they've got a great argument. What I've seen from Oregon is something that I like a little bit more than the other teams that are in that conversation, which include the Ohio State team that they beat, right? The thing that we keep coming back to on the Cover 3 podcast is, if you don't have the 12 man on the field penalty and you get four extra seconds, if Will Howard slides like 1 yard earlier, 1 second earlier, if Ohio State kicks a field goal to win that game, how different are the narratives about the Ohio State Buckeyes? How different are the narratives about the Oregon Ducks? But that's not what happened. So Oregon, to me, is a deserving number one in the AP Top 25 poll as we sit here going into Week 10. I think that they have a front-row ticket to the conversation of, are you the best team in the country? But they are not the monster. There are some years when we enter November and there is a clear monster in college football, a team to beat. There is maybe one or two teams that we look at as the team to beat. I think that that conversation going into November in 2024 is more of a four-team, five-team conversation. Here's what I like about Oregon, though, where we've seen some inconsistencies with some of those other teams, like an Ohio State, like a Georgia, like a Texas. Oregon's trajectory is more encouraging because Oregon's struggles were at the beginning of the season. Their offensive line, they hadn't quite settled on their starting five, couple of injuries along the way. Dylan Gabriel, you know, we just think that because he's a sixth-year quarterback with all this production, he's just going to hit the ground running and keep up his pace, forgetting the human element that he's taking on a new offense, playing with new teammates, and that he needs to maybe get settled. And what I have seen is that he has really gotten better and better each week. I'm going to believe that that has to do with getting more comfortable in Will Stein's system, because remember, Bo Nix had 2 years. He had the entire 2022 season in that offense at Oregon before he really exploded in 2023. So Dylan Gabriel, if we were to like play this forward, his best football might still be yet to come, potentially in the postseason, which is fantastic. So for Oregon, the thing that I like about Oregon and the reason why I am encouraged about them moving forward is that, unlike those other teams in the discussion for the best team in college football, they seem to be having their worst footballs behind them, and their best football might be ahead of them.
On the other side of that equation, Ohio State couldn't run the ball last week. Now they go to Penn State. Is this going to be another James Franklin disappointment, or is this the year Penn State breaks through and beats a top 10 team?
If it does, what does that mean for Ryan Day? Oh my gosh. The pressure that's on both of these coaches right now is just absolutely immense to win the big one. You know, where a lot of the narrative is about some of the way that some of these disappointments have happened on the very biggest stages, the way that you're able to win against everybody that you're better than, but you might fall short. I just think they're so far from what could be the best versions of themselves. Ohio State losing just tackle after tackle after tackle. You mentioned they cannot run the ball, and yet they've got two NFL-bound running backs in Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson. I mean, thank goodness they've got the easy button that is Jeremiah Smith, where Will Howard can run around, extend the play. Jeremiah's smart enough to be able to find the open space, and then if he gets the ball in the open field, it could be a touchdown at any moment just because of his unique athleticism. I see this one being low scoring. I see this one being like a real grind that's going to come down to turnovers, field goals, red zone execution, and who's willing to take a risk, because that's going to be ultimately what decides this kind of game. With Drew Aller being a little bit banged up, with Ohio State's offensive line being a little bit banged up, I think the defenses win the day, and because of that, it's going to make the fan reaction for the loser incredibly upset, and it's going to make the fan reaction for the winner like, whew, goodness we got through that, because I don't see a way that either one of these teams is healthy enough or is healthy enough right now or is built in a way to blow out the other. So if you're Penn State, you want to get that thing to the very, very end and hope that the same Ohio State team that came up short in a raucous Austin stadium does it again, as you've got that place roaring there in Happy Valley. And if you're Ohio State, you would like to force Penn State to have to climb out of a hole, because Tyler Warren has been amazing. Like, without a doubt, best tight end in the country. But who's their second-best pass catcher? Because you jump off a pretty big cliff when you get to Harrison Wallace, Julian Fleming, the rest of that wide receiver room. So you want to make Penn State have to push the ball down the field, climb out of a hole, because the best thing that Penn State has going for it right now is its defense and its run game. And so if you're Ohio State, like a 14-0 first half lead would be a great way to take control of that game.
Chip, we got 1 minute left. Deion Sanders says Shador is not getting the love for the Heisman because people are split on Deion, or because they're holding something against Deion. Any truth to that, in your opinion?
No. I think that Shador is not getting the love for the Heisman because Travis Hunter is. Because to go look at the odds makers, or to have any of these Heisman discussions that we're having weekly on CBS Sports HQ, Travis Hunter is the Heisman candidate. Travis Hunter is a one of one. You know, when Charles Woodson won it, sure, he played wide receiver in a couple games, made a couple big catches, but Travis Hunter is a top 10 wide receiver in the country while also being an All-American cornerback. Like, it's Ashton Jeanty, it's Travis Hunter, it's Dylan Gabriel, it's Cam Ward. That's the Heisman conversation. Shador is not getting slighted because of anything having to do with Deion Sanders, the head coach, and his father. Shador is just getting out. It is the most outstanding player. That is what the Heisman Trophy, by definition, is. What is more outstanding than what Travis Hunter has done on offense and defense?
Chip, love listening to you guys on the Cover 3 podcast. You do a fantastic job. Watching you on CBS Sports HQ as a college football analyst. Thank you for the time today.
Good. Y'all be well.
Appreciate you, Chip Patterson. I'll tell you what, one funny thing those guys do on their pod, they do something called sicko mode, which is they find some obscure college football games to bet on. I'm like, wow, I didn't even know that Troy was playing Southern Alabama or whatever it is. And they've got a first half over. You guys are sick.
I was always wondering, like, I saw Kennesaw State lose last night. If somebody comes in with $400,000 on Mercer, like, Vegas knows. Yes. Like, so that is some really interesting things in there. The Shador thing. By the way, we got a month left. He says there's only four names. I think there's a month left. And Heisman, this ain't done.
You have a dark horse?
I don't have a dark horse. I'm just saying those four players are not going to be the last we hear from. Like, it's not done. By the way, Shador leads in the Big 12 title game and just goes off, and Travis Hunter gets banged up again. I would totally rule him out. The guy's unbelievable this year.
We have a pick for you for tonight's game. Maggie and Perloff, 855-212-4227. Don't move.
All right, the Dependable Player of the Week is sponsored by Depend and the Prostate Cancer Foundation, reminding you that health is a long game and screening for prostate cancer is easier than ever. Learn more at depend.com. All right, EJ, when you pick these awards, you like to go a little off script. So I am assuming you did not go World Series MVP Freddie Freeman. I'm just taking that off the board.
I think he definitely would have gone World Series MVP Freddie Freeman.
But that's too easy. Like, he likes to show off and get interesting. Anybody could have taken Freddie Freeman.
Okay, how about Blake Treinen?
Nah. I think he went a different sport altogether.
Different sport?
I think he went Premier League. No, I don't know.
Were they playing basketball last night? Not Carl Anthony Towns. We can't start just doing Knicks.
It's Dependable Player of the Week, so we have to include Sunday and Monday night. So maybe he went Russell Wilson.
Interesting here. So the Dependable Player of the Week this week is Walker Buehler. Buehler. He arrived last night and he shut down the Yankees in the ninth inning of Game 5, closing down the series for the Dodgers. I did think it was cool in the broadcast that they were like, you know, this is a tradition of starters coming out of the bullpen. You know, Randy Johnson, Walter Johnson, Sandy Koufax.
Yeah.
And now Walker Buehler. I was like, what is going on here? But I didn't care. It was still cool. So shout out to Walker Buehler. You're the Dependable Player of the Week.
Hey, by the way, did you see, just wrapping up some stuff from the World Series last night, Perloff, you sent this to us. The actor from The Wire?
No, EJ said that.
Oh, sorry, EJ, you said it? I'm sorry.
Yeah, Wendell Pierce.
Wendell Pierce apparently got into it with some fans last night.
Yeah, apparently, he said he was hanging out with a Dodger fan. I guess he's not even a Dodger fan himself. And Yankee fans were throwing stuff at him. He had to leave. Couldn't even finish the game.
Did people know he was the... Not that it's ever excusable, but did people have any idea he was the famous guy from The Wire?
I feel like the Yankee fan audience feels like the audience that should know that. I feel like that crew would know.
Right. Have
but he was wearing a hat. I'm just wondering if he was being a little incognito.
Yeah, no.
He's
should know
that. He's super famous. He's a very famous looking guy.
I feel like New Yorkers love HBO. Guys.
I mean, you know him as Bunk on The Wire, but he's like, I've seen him in this, that, and the other thing. He's a character actor.
Yeah. He's been
we used to have him on DP show all the time. He is the best. Coolest guy ever. A Saints fan, right? Like, he is just, you know, you read the note. He said, I'm done in sports. That'd be sad because he really knows the sports.
Well, I just think the biggest L besides the actual Yankees in this World Series were easily the Yankee fans. Between the two guys from Game 4 who, you know, interfered with Mookie Betts and they were not allowed back in Game 5. We'll see what happens to their season tickets moving forward. Shock of all shocks. I'm being sarcastic here. They're friends with Gronkowski. It's like, it's two on the nose. But then also with a famous actor who's getting harassed, Yankee fans took a major L here.
Yeah, I know. Listen, that should be the Mets fans taking the L.
I mean...
No, I'm just kidding. But generally, like, if you'd asked me who would be crazier coming into this, I might have said, oh, probably the Mets fans. But I don't remember any real Mets fans incidents, to be honest. Jets fans are bad. That I will tell you from firsthand experience. That I think that's the worst fan base in New York.
An Eagle fan telling anyone that the fans are bad is just high comedy. but you mentioned the Jets, so let's move to tonight's game. Because
by the way, if you think it's bad, this is in New York, right?
Yes.
A liquored up Halloween crowd in that stadium with this team. I would not wear Texans gear.
Oh, well, I'm a little worried for Rodgers. People are acting a little lawless now. He throws a bad pick. Is there a bottle coming his way? By the way, I really hope not. I don't even want to joke about that.
I think there's so much hate to go around for fans on that team. They're so disappointed.
Oh, you mean Sauce Gardner might get one?
I think they're a lot. I mean, if they knew who Jeff Ulbrich was, then they might throw something. But I mean, honestly, when there be all the guys on silent, no one's going to have any idea which one is Ulbrich. That should be fun, by the way. A little Halloween dress up in the state. I do like that, by the way.
Who's going to be wearing the paper bags on their heads?
I love seeing costumes in the stands. That's a good TV visual. Hopefully things stay more positive. You're right. This is New York's got to redeem itself. And that's when I turn to the New York Jets.
When things are looking bleak, who's Old Faithful? The New York Jets. No, I think this could be a pretty hostile crowd because I know there's a lot of Yankee fans who are also Jets fans, and they might still be a little ticked off after last night. Meanwhile, the Jets are favored in this game. So it opened at, 1.5, then went to 2. Now it's back to 1.5. I don't know. Listen, I get it that when the Texans acquired Stephon Diggs, their Super Bowl odds changed from 25-1 to 15-1. It's a big deal, and now he's out for the year, and Nico Collins is still out.
Also, it's a short week. That was a very, very tough game against the Colts last week. That was 60 minutes of football. In this situation, we've seen a lot of teams this year, too. Like, if you're coming off a tough Sunday game into that Thursday game on the road, that is not an ideal situation. Texans have been, they've been trying to give away a game. We've been talking about that all year.
Is tonight the night? And if the Jets win this, are people going to start getting false hope again?
Yes, you know they are. You know the answer to that question is yes.
Fantastic job on the costumes, guys. EJ Stewart, Ryan Botcher, Andrew Bogish, Andrew Kaplan, who's always with us right here, right in our hearts. Weedos, coffee drinkers, you guys are the best. Thank you to Chip Patterson as well. See you tomorrow to finish out the week strong.